This is K-12 Tech Talk.
K-12 Tech Talk.
The podcast by K-12 Techs for K-12 Techs. Real conversations, real arguments, and real banter on trending K-12 technology topics and issues.
Live from the NTP studios, this is the K-12 Tech Talk podcast. This is an episode. This is a special one. It's just Chris and I here. Mark is on vacation. He is not a part of this episode in any way, shape, or fashion. We're giving him the week off. But this is a super cool episode. So a while back, I guess it's been over a month ago, Clever had their big introduction of student MFA. And we had questions specifically about if a student, how does their MFA really protect a student account if they're not logging in with Clever? And that kind of rained on the parade, we thought, of Clever's MFA.
Yep.
But as we found out in this interview we had with Mohit from Clever, who is like super senior developer, one of the OGs at Clever.
Yeah, he's like their historian. When new employees come on, they say, talk to Mohit. He can tell you the history here.
Yeah, super cool guy. He walks us through the whole MFA thing. But shortly after the MFA webinar that they had, Chris and I stumbled upon the teacher library in Clever. And quite frankly, it upset me because of privacy issues. And Chris, you ended up turning it off in your district, right? And I ended up turning it off as well due to privacy concerns. And we kind of talked through that with Mohit and kind of peeled back the layers of the onion about the teacher library with Mohit. And we both kind of voiced our concerns about student data privacy and as it relates to the teacher library with Mohit. And he kind of came back with Clever's perspective of it. And we had a good back and forth. And I feel like it was a good discussion back and forth. And it became clear that Clever, it's not a done deal. Like Chris, correct me if I'm wrong or if you got a different feeling on this. But I got the feeling that Clever was open to conversations around the teacher library as it relates to privacy and how that functions.
There's a theme with Mohit's conversation, and I think with Clever's philosophy about they do things that will work for every school district.
Yes.
The smallest to the largest. That tends to be a focal point of how they implement things. And as he goes through that, it starts to make sense on why settings are the default ways that they are.
Yeah, we think it's a really good interview. We were super pumped after this conversation with Mohit. And as I introduce the interview, this is not a compensated interview with Clever whatsoever. Normally, advertisers are the only ones that get these dedicated episodes like this. And we were just lucky enough to convince Clever to come on to the train wreck of this show and kind of be subject to our questioning about student MFA in the teacher library. And they were willing, which surprised us.
We do have sponsors that we love. So we want to mention Visor. We want to mention Howard and Extreme. We'll put some good information in the podcast description about all their services and all their products. Thank you to our sponsors for letting interviews like this happen.
Have a listen and give us some feedback. Thanks for listening. Let's introduce Mohit from Clever. Mohit, do you want to tell us what your role is at Clever and kind of what you do there?
Yeah, of course. So Mohit Gupta started at Clever right at the very beginning. So I've been with the company since, we were just kind of sitting outside of conferences trying to convince people that we are solving a real problem. That was about 11 years ago. I lead, I'm the director of product. I lead all our product there. And, also...
Did you come up with the word Clever?
Like,
did you have the whiteboard out and you were like, let's call it Clever?
That is a funny story because the name, all the kind of internal stuff was still had the old name. But I joined Clever and not that company, which was not as didn't sound as exciting, but that's a very good question.
So you didn't come in and say, guys, what the heck? You pick what Clever? That's the name.
You were like, we need something Clever as our name.
Right? I have heard that more times than maybe my name now about the name Clever.
That's funny.
Yeah.
All right. Sorry, we keep interrupting you. Go on. No.
So I lead product head, and you know, through the years, I've done everything. So internally, my role is also historian. You know, I kind of like everybody who joins, I kind of give them a history of where we've come from, why we started the company. But also I have a background in like security and privacy. So that was a lot of my early work, was making sure we get those pieces right before we were, you know, able to hire. We had kind of the resources to be able to hire experts, which we've done since. But it was very important for us to get that right early on. So did some of that early.
So some of the big news, your big announcement and webinar a couple of weeks ago, it was shortly after your the report that you guys had came out. You had the big announcement, right? Well, student MFA, and you had the big webinar. So if we have a listener listening that did not attend that webinar, can you kind of explain? I mean, we all know why we got there, or why you got there. Kind of explain that process of Clever MFA to one of our listeners here real quick.
So yeah, so Clever is a platform for kind of powering digital learning in schools. We kind of connect the data and applications that schools rely on so that everything works seamlessly in the classroom. Our mission from the start was to advance technology that works for students. It's like, it's so strange, that happens rarely, and it's really, really hard work to make that happen. So what we kind of focus a lot on is making sure that district IT teams, students, school leaders, teachers, parents can make applications work for kids without spending hours and weeks and months. And we like kind of started with one end, which was just creating those accounts, and have kind of kept on solving more problems. As you create the accounts, then people were like, well, how do we have 20 passwords, what do we do? And so we've just kind of expanded, right. And all through, the issue of security keeps like top of mind, and privacy, because, you know, all of these people who are responsible for a kid's education will not want to do anything if it's not secure and private. So like, that's kind of like the two, we want to make it very, very easy, but it's only possible to do if you do it securely in a way that it works, with like keeping data private. But also we want to solve the problem for everyone. So a lot of the reason why I'm giving this background is it goes into a lot of our classroom MFA launch. We want to solve the problem in a way that works for the smallest schools in the country, and also kind of the biggest, which are having like, you know, a million students and have to manage that at that scale. And so, yeah, security, privacy, and then making things easy and seamless for the student is kind of where we are.
So hit us with student MFA or classroom MFA real quick. What does it actually do? We know what MFA is, and you're applying that to students, but how is a student presented with that? How is that easy? Because when I think people think of MFA, the first thought is it's typically a barrier. You know, I got to dig my phone out of my pocket and get my second code, or I've got to get my YubiKey out and tap it. So how are you making that easy for the student to log in and not be a barrier to get into their Chromebook?
Yeah. And there are, so just kind of how we've been working on this for a very long time. And so the launch is just a place where we've gotten to where we think that we can solve this problem for every student from every grade, right? So we call it classroom MFA, but it should work in every classroom. And the second part, so just starting with like MFA, you know, the general idea is that you have more than one way to say who you are to a computer system. And when we first started seeing problems with elementary kids, we had to like invent the Clever badge, and that took a while. We went through, like, it seems natural, but we went through so many iterations of different ideas.
And it's great. My elementary school loves the Clever badge. Yes, it's awesome.
So the reason why I bring that up is that we also went back as we started on the, how do we get the second factor in a way that works for the problems that are unique to elementary schools, which are different from the problems of high school, right? How do we bring back some of those pieces? So the way that classroom MFA works is generally having two student-friendly, age-appropriate authentication factors that use a different form of trust. So a badge is something that the kid has, right? So and then if you're already using a badge, then we wanted to bring something in that the student remembers. So we have this concept of a picture MFA where, you know, they are selecting an animal or a fruit or both to have the appropriate level of kind of randomness. And we do lots of stuff in the background so that when somebody is trying to attack it at scale, it's like they're entering a extremely large random password. It's not like they're selecting two pictures. All right. Like if you want to
purple cow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like we talked about the cow.
Yeah. If you want to do that by hand, yes, you could try to attack a student's, you know, but then you can go one by one and it's slow. It's at the pace of the student. We kind of have timing in there so that it works at like that.
Oh,
but if you want to do that at scale, these are some very long random strings that you have to get two of them right in order in addition to then first getting the badge. So that's kind of the general idea. Is we also do support, we have plans for having a lot more. So when we announced Classroom MFA, the idea was that this is, we have enough to start. One of the things for high school students, for example, we do support app-based authentication, SMS-based authentication.
Okay.
We support passkeys, which are going to become more and more popular as they start getting adopted in the kind of consumer use cases, which, you know, high school students will get and middle school students will get very used to. But those are not the kind of things that unlock security in the classroom. So just kind of the two big factors is a combination of using username password, which schools have told us they want to start training middle school students to start using them. And like, but they don't want that at that point to be the only security because they're just starting to learn that concept of a username password. So you can use a username password and a badge as the second factor. So you're something you remember and something you have, or you could use for elementary school, a badge and the pictures, which is something you have and something you know. So the idea is how do we also support the training of students as they grow up and have something at each place.
So one of the things, you know, we were super excited about this being announced, and from a Clever perspective, if your district is bought into the Clever portal and you are using the Clever logins, this makes complete sense. But just as an example, my district, really, we only use the Clever badge at the elementary level, and we have a few kids at a higher level due to motor restrictions. They can't type, so we've used the badge with them. But beyond really the elementary school, we don't use the Clever login process. So to be clear, right now, Clever MFA doesn't really protect a login to the Google account that isn't authenticated by Clever, correct?
That is correct based on the district's choice. I'll give you a simple example of something that maybe either of you have seen. So a big way Clever badges get used, and about, I think, 50% of students in the US kind of do some form of this, which is if you use a Chromebook, you are using a Clever badge in elementary school to get into the Chromebook.
Right.
Now, that's a Google login.
Yep.
Right? And then...
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So basically, for many, many years now, at huge scale, we've been kind of, in technical terms, the identity provider for elementary school students' Google accounts. And you know, we've worked with Google, like this is running in many districts and it's being used every day. And when you think about kind of the problem of, oh, what do I do to secure my Google account if I want to use Classroom MFA, Clever's Classroom MFA, to protect my Google account also? Well, there's some change management as you add more students, but that's true for any MFA rollout. But yeah, we feel very confident that we can get Clever to be the kind of security plane for Google accounts. Now,
so go ahead.
Many districts choose to either not secure Google for elementary kids because it doesn't matter. And at high school, they want them to have their own Google accounts. And that's, we totally allow that. So you can select a group of students, make Clever the default authentication system into their Google account. And then you can expand the kind of benefits of Classroom MFA to your Google email and docs and everything.
So, and this is pure ignorance on my part because I haven't really looked at it that heavily. But if I'm understanding you correctly, I can make some setting changes to where at the high school level, their account has to more or less to get into their Google account, it has to be authenticated through Clever. If I'm a bad guy down the street trying to log into student ABC's account and I go to mail.google.com, I would not be able to log in. Is that accurate or no?
So conceptually, that is totally accurate. I can kind of very quickly give you a sense of what will happen, because you know that's also the positive case of it should work. The students themselves going to mail.google.com and trying to log in should work.
So
the way that would work is they would go to mail.google.com, they would enter their email address, like I would enter Mohit at like classichighschool.edu.
Sure.
Enter. And then if the district IT team has set it up that Clever should be the authentication, they would get redirected to Clever. Google would tell us what the district is. You would have to enter a username, password, if that's the way you've configured your primary authentication system. And your secondary authentication could be badge, could be passkeys, depending on what grade you're in. And then you would get redirected back to the right Google place. And again, this has been working for many years when elementary kids use badge. Like, that's the same thing that happens. In that case, you don't ever see that happen because they just go to the clever.com/badges, click the thing. A badge contains all the information about what district you're in, what school you're in. You know, we just kind of do that all in the background, and it's not connected to your username password. So there are a few caveats and change management things, which if you have questions, we can go into. But
we were more catching the vibe that it was great for like district managed Chromebooks, but not so much Chrome browser, a bad guy. You know, like that's the game changer thing. If Clever can help with that. So that's good.
Yeah, I think that this is something, we are moving into doing more and more because the security surface area attacks for schools are getting bigger. But kind of technically and on a product side, logging into a Chromebook only works if you log into the Google account.
Right.
Like Google doesn't allow that whole process to happen unless you log into a real Google email account. Only then will they give you access to the Chromebook. And so we've been doing that for a very long time. We just haven't been telling anybody to go in non-Chromebook places.
Yeah. And that was our concern after we were super high on the webinar, like, this is awesome. Yeah. And then we started digesting it and talking it through. And it's like, well, that's great for a device that has to log in through Clever. But if it doesn't do anything to protect me just going to mail.google.com, then it's still, that account is still sort of exposed. But if we can do what you're saying,
if you're telling the truth right now,
if we can really do what you're saying about, you know, making a couple setting changes and requiring, you know, if student Smith goes and tries to go to mail.google.com, and then it forces them more or less through that Clever portal with, if MFA is turned on, that's huge. I'm back on the, hey, this is freaking awesome train right now.
I believe it. So don't trust me. You know, like, it's like in terms of it's awesome. I have been working on it for so long. We think it is amazing. Again, I do want to say what we are seeing is districts are first starting by just securing the learning apps, which require less change management. And they start from elementary because they're already using Clever, just like you said, Josh.
Right.
And then start playing around with one classroom, you know, because we work very, for now, Google has been a great partner. And so you can use specific OUs and just turn on Flower for a specific OU. So you can make like a group of students in one classroom and say, I want to just try it out if all of this works. Because we don't, Google doesn't allow us, and we don't want to ever read Google passwords. So we have a system where we can solve that problem, but that is a whole another complicated piece that we've built out. And that requires a district to kind of just like roll out a centralized password management system so that students are not confused.
And I think that's an important point is, you know, with security in mind and privacy in mind, you guys are never seeing the password. I think that's a huge, that's a huge plus that I think it's kind of an assumption and a lot of people don't think about it, but that I think that is definitely worth pointing out. You guys don't ever see that password. You're doing authentication in other manners, you know, be it SAML, whatever. You're not touching that password, which is huge.
I also want to quote him. I think he said, for now, Google has been great to work with. That was a good, because we go back and forth on if we like Google or not.
Yeah,
too.
Google, they can be
That's not a quote. That's not a quote. No, yeah, maybe I misheard it.
Yeah, no. We love working with them. And it's been so.
Okay, Mohit. Okay.
Yeah. It's just, you should, I think for, we have a product that we kind of lovingly call the Google Bundle, which is very, very popularly used, but like we don't call it that externally. But generally the idea that if you use Google and Clever together, it's like just an amazing experience because of like their presence of Chromebooks, Google Classroom, which we can manage accounts directly. And then we can also work with Google Workspace to kind of manage, create account so that like if a school student is graduating, we can like archive their account and kind of keep everything in sync across the board. Yeah. It's really works.
Yeah.
It's like the ideal state where we want to get to with every account.
Yeah, I know a couple districts using your IDM, your automated account creation with Workspace and Sys and Clever, and it works very well. So we've spent quite a bit of time talking about MFA. I'm super interested. Again, I'm back on the yeah, this is awesome train, because this is awesome. So quickly, I don't want to take up too much more of your time, but one thing that came up since we started digging back into Clever was the teacher library and those applications. I think there's over 200 applications that you guys have put into the teacher library. That you're sharing a very finite field list, but it's still student information, you know, first initial, last name, classroom, stuff like that. The issue from my perspective, my district has taken a very heavy stance on data privacy agreements. And right now, and actually Google helped out with this, with the third party approval process that started back in October, I think, where now, most of the listeners know that, you know, to sign in with Google now on an external third-party application, the administrator has to approve it. And what we have taken the stance of, I'm not approving that new application until I have a signed or executed data privacy agreement. So that has helped tremendously. The problem came in with my district specifically, and Mohit, this is just personal experience here, so take it for what it's worth. So I had a teacher that had found the teacher library, because we don't push a whole lot of the Clever portal, but I do have a couple teachers in it. A teacher had found the teacher library and wanted her class to use a specific application in that library that historically has refused to sign data privacy agreements. So from my perspective, and I know after doing some research and some communication, those vendors that are in the teacher library have been vetted specifically by Clever and have signed a different, maybe more restrictive agreement with Clever about data sharing and data privacy. But my question is to you, how can we have that conversation, or how can we hold those vendors to that same standard if on a normal day they're not willing to sign a data privacy agreement, but they've worked with you to have, you know, enhanced security, whatever that means, I still want that protection of the data privacy agreement that says they're adhering to certain data privacy controls, that if they have a breach, they're going to notify me. If I request to have data removed, they'll delete it. And the big one, that they're not going to sell, that they're not going to sell that student data or student usage. So can you help us kind of understand that teacher library and how we can tie out or rationalize that relationship between a DPA and the teacher library?
Does that make sense? That makes total sense. And this is not a unique case, right? Like, I was just going to start with that, that this seems like something we think about a lot. We have a team that is thinking about this all the time. I started with saying I'm a privacy and security kind of nerd, more than even a technology and person. So I want to just like not go into the details of like how we structured the policy and but I'll give you a sense of like two things. One, why we started this thing. And you can please tell me if you think this is like not real. So I would love to hear that. One, teachers were going and signing up for accounts on the internet, and district administrators had no clue. And we thought that was scary, and we wanted to do something about it. And also, we were seeing on the application side, people were saying, well, if I do all the right things of like minimizing data and kind of like not getting any PII, teachers think I'm a worse application, right, than an application that is just like collecting a bunch of data, allowing you to upload files. So the motivations in the marketplace were like not directed towards like apps that handle data better, get adoption faster. It was the other way around. Now, we haven't solved the problem, but Curl Library is our attempt to solve kind of like the communication problem between a teacher trying to tell an administrator clearly that they want to use an app and they've tried it, an administrator being able to easily look at what apps teachers are using, and new apps that are doing the right thing around data privacy getting visibility, rather than apps that are like using some guerrilla marketing techniques and kind of scraping data, getting contact books and stuff like that. So that's kind of like the ecosystem that we started the library in, and I don't think that has changed. We've been now doing this for 5 or 6 years. That basics remain the same, but a lot of other things have changed. We wrote the USDA, which is the Universal Data Sharing Agreement that every app on the library has to sign to get there, which has a very restrictive. You can't do any advertising, let alone like sell data in other ways. You will only get very minimal data. If you get extra data, you can't use it for a library-created account and things like that. But over time, a lot of standard data sharing agreements across on a statewide, on the federal level have come up. So we are participant, and we started very early in those because we had written one. So that's kind of one aspect that is going on. In terms of the concerns that you have, you can always go in and block the application that you're worried about.
Yeah, and to kind of talk through that process, and not to interrupt you, but we looked at those options, you know, the block individual application, defaultly turn it off. And quite honestly, I would like to see another option of instead of defaultly allow, which is allowing all 200, I think it was over 250 or 230 applications, I would like to see a third option. And you know, in my mind, this shouldn't be hard to develop and implement, but maybe it is. The third option.
Josh is the guy that carries scissors around because he's ready to like cut off the internet cord like, at all times.
Mohit, you and I are probably cut from the same cloth. Like I think we probably agree on more things that we don't agree on. I would like to see a third option of like, let's default deny these 230 applications, but that's not a no. Like, let's deny them and then have the ability that once we capture a DPA, if we need it, and let's face it, a lot of states now are coming out with state legislation that are requiring schools to grab these DPAs or acquire these DPAs. So let's have a default deny for those 200 applications. And then I can go in and say, yes, I've received a DPA for extra math, or I've received a DPA for another application. I'm going to now allow them to be available in the teacher library.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Is that something that might be feasible in the future?
Of course. Like, it's something that we consider all the time. There are some very real trade-offs with what I defined as the goals of the library are, which is to bring those apps that teachers are going and signing up for without you knowing.
Sure. Right?
Like, so really the thing that we are aiming for is like, okay, so we block this application from default. Are teachers not just going to go to the website of that app and now share even more data? And
sure.
Which is not an excuse for not having a block list. Right? Like, I want to be like, yes, I've heard that feedback from you, and we hear it and we consider it very deeply. And, you know, we've added more and more and more features in that direction over time to make it easier. Like, I think now what we do is for any new app, we like notify the district a lot sooner, and they can just block before that even comes to the library. One of the things that we've seen when we've tried this kind of experiment of like blocking the library, it's just, it gets like super old very quickly, right? Like, none of the new apps are coming. And like, every district administrator, whether they are in like one school or like 100 schools, they don't have time to go and check what new apps are there and kind of allow the ones that they assigned for DPA for. So from our perspective, if you want to only have apps in the district that the district has a relationship with, the library is probably not library is not designed for that purpose. And we don't have the controls actually to enforce that DPA and like have the nuances of how you signed it show up in the library, right?
Sure.
Because so that is, we have a bunch of features at the district level to add apps, and we want to keep expanding that stuff.
So from that perspective, and maybe extra math, my issue revolved around extra math, just to be completely transparent. So when I went in, it was in the library, so it's available in the library, but whenever I tried to go into back at the district level, not the library, but at the district level for that interface, extra math isn't listed in there anymore. So that's why it became such a big issue for me, was because it was in the library, but it's not at the district level. So I can't say roster at the district level once we've signed a DPA, because I'm sure there's a reason, but it was removed from that application list at the district level.
Yeah. And that one, I have to just say, applications have the choice of where they go.
Interesting.
On Clever. If they say remove us, we like, if ExtraMath comes and says they don't want to be in the library, you know, we kind of respect that. If they don't want to be in the application list at the district level, we don't ask any questions around that, right? Like, it's their application.
Yeah.
We want to respect it. So I think you will see us respond and continue to work on meeting the needs of the state laws that are changing. We are working kind of, there's also a bunch of stuff around COPA reinterpretation.
Right.
We are working on a lot of areas around the library there, but the goal is always to capture wild experimentation that is going on the internet and bring it to your visibility. So the fact that we are having this conversation and you're able to say this one app,
right,
sure,
teachers are using it and I see a problem, I think that's what I'm excited about, the success of the library. And then I want to give you all the tools to deal with that. And I think just removing that problem from visibility, we kind of struggle with it. We've gone back and forth a lot of times. I want to be very transparent. We are not 100% confident we've gotten it right every time. But, you know, we do library changes very often. And there are ways to turn off the library but keep existing installs and block things and then remove them from people's portals.
Sure.
So we're trying to experiment.
Josh, do you agree with this? Like, because I ended up turning off the library. I think you and I would have liked if it's off and we choose to turn it on into what setting.
Yeah. Yeah. Mohit, to your point in defense, I think the library's been around for like 2 years, 2.5 years, right? Is that more? Okay. So shame on me. I'll say it. Shame on me for not being plugged in and paying attention that was there. I think the fact that Google is now requiring administrator approval for a lot of those SSO type applications that are, you know, granting drive access, granting classroom access. Now that approval for that interface to work is on the administrator level, that's going to help out. And I say help out because I'm one of those guys that like the walled garden. I'm all for teachers experimenting and finding new applications, but we have to do that carefully. And that third party approval is helping. So I understand when library came out, that wasn't a feature. So I understand, you know, from your perspective, wanting to see that and wanting to track that and actually taking a better stance at protecting that data at the time. So it's going to be interesting to see how Clever handles it going forward now that extra layer from Google, that third party application approval process is there. It's just going to be interesting to watch that play out. I'll just leave it at that.
And I want to say, this is not the end of the library, or this is not, we won't move forward. We won't give district administrators more control in the direction that you're asking for. I think we will. I just don't want to have I don't have a clear answer today.
Yeah. Sure. No,
this is great conversation. I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love this, and we have this all the time. Every week we are meeting, and there's like different laws. There's the parent visibility laws, there's the co-party interpretation laws, there's some of this like approval workflows, which we've also been working on in different aspects of Clever. All of that, like, what does it mean together? And like, yes, we are working on it, and we'll ask districts for their opinions about when we figure out like what the next two or three steps are.
It's great.
And it's just, we don't have the team the size of Google. We work on like one thing at a time.
that's respectable. And I was just going to say, one of the new features that you guys have rolled out is that new reporting feature, you know, the new plugin, the reporting feature that shows kind of app usage historically. I started using that a couple weeks ago. It very, very similarly or very closely mocks several competitors that I've used. I will say the one thing that I'm missing on it is the ability to drill down into and see like classroom level or even student activity, like say these hours the student was in these applications. But man, you guys are like 90% of the way there. Like it's really cool to be able to say, this building, we're seeing these 10 applications be used this much, this many hits in a day. You know, that's great information to have. Great information to have.
I am sad that I was the person working on that. We launched that in 2019.
Really?
And rolled it out broadly in March of 2020. It was the worst timing for launch because we launched it 10 days later. Every school shut down.
Yeah.
And and then a lot of people have built the same tooling based on our initial design and privacy plan. That product took so much, like our heuristics of that data are, I haven't seen anybody else's solution, but I don't think anybody else would have done the work that we've done. And the standards that we have for how much that average time is correct in a world where a Google Chromebook is not reporting time on a website. While, like, we only collect data that is written in a URL list with no extra information. So if you see YouTube there, we only capture YouTube and not what the video was.
Yeah.
And so the balancing the privacy... Cool. We also have a secondary verification so that only devices that you own, even if the managed app goes, somebody installs it by themselves by watching it, you need to push this, like, you must have done this, like an analytics token, which is like an ID to make sure that the tracking works and it only gets reported to you.
Hmm.
Because if it goes to any other account, we just can easily drop it because you have the secret key. And if you think about it, if you start going down to the student level, the accuracy of the data needs to be orders of magnitude higher.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we have the highest accuracy to even get to the detail where now we are giving school and grade level and app level. So you can go school, grade, app. That's like pretty down. But like, for example, we don't show the data unless you have 500 devices reporting. So there's some things that I think other people are not thinking that if you take disciplinary action based on something that is not correct,
right,
or you're making decisions based on something that we are not statistically confident this is going to be the exact number that you should make a decision on, we don't want to show that data. So yes, it's I am sad that we can't do even better, but you can trust that number a lot.
That's cool.
And yeah, any spine and detail, if other people are giving you the numbers, unless they're doing network level filtering, you know, which of course, like, that is not our business, right? So we are not into a network security and network blocking or like in decrypting secure data, which a lot of companies do very well. We don't want to build that.
Sure.
And so we want to build stuff that is like at the user level, that is helping teachers, students, and district administrators like make learning choices.
Yeah. No, it makes sense. We've gone way longer than I anticipated going.
No.
It's been
great.
Awesome conversation.
I guess we still like Clever. No, you're the guy. Like, you are who they should have sent. Like, you have been great today.
Yeah.
I'm glad they sent like a technical person that I feel like you. I don't know if you got prepped.
I am not an engineer anymore.
I don't know if you got prepped about how crazy Josh is with stuff, but like,
yeah,
you made it.
Yeah, they sent the right guy. You know, if you're telling the truth about how into privacy and data integrity and data privacy you are, they sent the right guy, because I going into this, I'm like, I'm going to ask privacy questions. Like, this is a very real thing. Right. So I'm glad you were with us, because you were able to answer the questions we had, and in a manner that, you know, I feel like you're giving us very honest answers. And I feel like we had a good back and forth conversation. It wasn't, it wasn't you just saying, well, Clever is not interested in doing it. This is the way we're doing it. The fact that you were, transparent enough to say that you guys have conversations weekly, monthly, whatever, and you're constantly going back and saying, are we doing the right thing? Is this the right way to do this? That makes me feel really good about Clever's development process and ongoing.
Thank you so much. It is. And also, like, you know, just always send us a note if you disagree with what we are doing. Like, we want to have things work for every district, every school. And we know that is not easy.
Right.
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 Like, we can add every button to tweak everything, to turn everything on and off. But then the people who want to just like set it up and never think about it again, which is a lot of the US school, who are focusing on other important things because it's a math teacher or an English teacher doing their IT, right? Then it breaks for that group. But we also work with New York and LA, and, you know, they have a lot of controls on Clever that we hide from everybody else. So
he's name dropping, Chris.
We constantly watch. And then I talk of them because they just work at such scale.
Sure. Oh, right? Absolutely.
Like, the thing that I like to drop is that you work with kind of over 95 of the top 100 schools. This up, because this is at the end. And then we work with more than 75,000 schools in the US, and we've like started expanding internationally, and we are not even counting those. So I am very, you know, I remember the time when every school was like a big percentage increase on Clever. So I don't take it for granted at all. So many schools trust us with their data and kind of securing students, and then also just like making it easy for students. The amount of time we spent on that sound that comes out of the badge, so that, because students love the ding.
Yeah.
And we love getting videos of like students like just bursting into laughter, logging in. And we're seeing a lot of them because we're going to different countries and people are seeing it for the first time. So anyways.
That's cool.
I can keep talking about this whatever, but it was great to chat with you. I really appreciate
last
the
question.
Pushbacks and kind of like the details.
Do you have a clever tattoo?
I do not.
Okay. We were thinking about getting
lots
one.
Lots and lots of clever t-shirts and sweatshirts
but
and all the side that you made up with.
Nothing permanent.
You don't have a clever QR code on your shoulder or something?
Yeah, that's your badge.
Don't you see it in my face? it's just like, it's me.
You raise your shoulder
so
up,
much time
here
because I don't need it.
Yeah, big back tattoo, you know, your whole back.
That's a good idea.
The MFA
don't
is on
that,
my skin.
You want the badges to be resettable. So
the tech guy voids it on accident.
Yeah. We had the system and it's no longer required, but early on when we released badges that would track Twitter and people pasting readable badges on Twitter and then like invalidating them.
Yeah.
Because early on people were like just taking the badge and like taking the picture and putting it on the internet.
Yeah.
But that's less of a problem now.
All right. Great. We really appreciate you spending as much time with us as you did. And it's probably a bad thing to say if I have a complaint to email you, because I'll take that. Honestly, you might be getting an email from me later on. You never know. maybe we'll have you back on after one of us implements MFA. We'll see. Maybe Chris will take the jump and do MFA and we'll have you back on to talk about the experience. We appreciate it, Mohit. And
would love that.
We will we'll chat with you later. Thanks for coming on.
Awesome. Thank you so much. This was super fun.
The views and opinions expressed in the K-12 Tech Talk podcast are the personal opinions of Josh, Chris, and Mark, and do not represent the views or opinions of our sponsors or other organizations that we're affiliated with. The material information presented here is for general information and entertainment purposes only. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.